Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Well, it's great to be here, Ben. I'm really happy to be on the show today as the other host slash specialist guest of them all.
Specialist guest of them all.
That's right. Of them all. Of all the guests, you know, we've hosted here on the show, I think I am the most special.
There's no doubt about it. I would say that you are far and away topping the charts.
Yes.
Speaking of charts, this is barely a segue. It appears as of moments before coming on the pop, Jonathan and Benjamin Carlin, currently listed on the Cave Spring High School Wikipedia for notable graduates.
Oh!
Our name is currently in red because we don't actually have our own Wikipedia pages.
This required a bit of this has been a saga. I'm not sure if you've been following it.
A bit. I was told by our office manager, Jordan, that we should not direct people to do this very thing that we have done.
Right.
Per
Jordan's request, this is us requesting that you not go to the Wikipedia page.
Nice. I see what you did there. Very good. Yeah. Very good. Yeah.
Although
well
you should go to see if we're still there because apparently it has been in flux. Now, after we mentioned it, a lot of people went to the Cave Spring High School Wikipedia page and they're just like, well, I'll just add in Carlin Brothers right here. And so I got inundated with tweets on last Friday morning after the pop went live, like, oh my God, we did it. You're on the page. And I was so excited. And then I pulled it up and it was gone.
Oh no.
I know. So whatever moderator the edits were running up the poll to at Wikipedia apparently was like, I don't think so.
Right.
And so then I was looking on the Reddit. Apparently there was some like posting on there that the Cave Spring High School Wikipedia page was like currently under some sort of protection
due to
vandalism or something.
Which was us, I think. Actually, it wasn't us.
But okay, so this is also fun. My wife, Beth, has a friend who does some Wikipedia editing.
Really?
And she listens to the pop.
Okay.
And so she went in and she could like look at like the log and stuff. And she texted Beth just like a screenshot of like all the times people had tried. And her text was just, Cave Spring High School is having none of it.
Oh my gosh.
which was really funny. But then we checked this morning and it's there. Plus, there was a post on our Reddit page from someone. I want to say, let me see if I can pull it up right here. A Wikipedia editor requested that they please provide reliable sources that support the change you want to be made. They don't appear to be notable enough to be included, which was a dagger right in my heart.
Wow. I wish I didn't know that.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
But if the page was protected and now our names are on there, it seems like either someone higher up has done some additional research and determined that we are notable enough, or that whatever vandalism ban was in place got lifted because it's a temporary thing and the little colonels were just like waiting. So
waiting and ready.
We shall continue to update. Now it seems to me, when we looked at it, we were like, all the other notable graduates were listed in blue and our names were in red, which I was like, what does this mean? Is this like, does this mean like a pending edit or something? That was my initial thought. But if you see red font, it just means that those people don't have pages made for them yet on Wikipedia. So if there's a different project people want to take on,
it's being
in little kernel culture.
Is being relevant enough to have our own Wikipedia page?
Is to make pages for us.
Oh my gosh. So yes, projects abound.
This
is like one of those strange things about being like, and this is the thing, is that like anybody who hears, I guess, like they'll be like, yeah, like what do you do for a living? And it's like, I make content on YouTube. Most of the time they're like, no way. Do you really? How many subscribers do you have?
Now, how do you make money?
Now, how
do you have to place the ads?
Do you right now? You get to choose which ones are red, right? I don't know why people from the Deep South are exclusively the ones who are asking us these questions.
Oh, we're going to come back to that in a minute.
Okay. But yeah, I was asked these questions when I first met Alice, my wife's father. He was not like, it wasn't like that classic, now how do you make money? You know, like it wasn't right. Like a very stern conversation, but he was genuinely fascinated. Like I think yeah. It never occurred to him that this is a way that people out there are making enough money to actually have like a career off of it.
Right.
Which is interesting.
It's a pretty new profession.
It is a pretty new profession. Yeah. So I feel like there's such mixed reactions when you tell people that this is what you do, because there's either people who know that it's become like a rather popular like career aspiration.
Yeah.
And they're like, wow, that's really cool. Or there are other people that, yeah, exactly. They put the question mark, like you invisibly see it above their head.
Yeah. So there's like a wide range. Like the more internet savvy you are, the less question. Or like some people would just be like, oh yeah. That, like if it's a really like a teenager, they wouldn't have any questions.
Right.
I don't know if you like. But, and then, yeah, some people are going to be like your father-in-law who have like their, now what, now wait, what the who, what now?
Yeah,
how
exactly.
does this work?
Right.
Yep. You do what? And then, I don't know why I gave him that accent.
See, I told you, it's, just, right. it's exclusively people from the Deep South.
Why?
They don't understand, apparently.
I'm sure, look, hey, if you're in the Deep South, I'm sure you totally understand. I'm sure, definitely you get it.
This is,
there's a third class of people.
Okay, third class. Yeah,
which is like, oh, I'm a full-time YouTuber, which is, like, I think some people's interpretation is like, oh, so you're unemployed.
Oh, sure, right, sure, yeah. Yes. And I feel like this is the case very frequently. This is like a pet peeve of mine, is like having owned a couple of businesses, I feel like maybe there's a little bit of like own perspective that like it's not all as, you know, glorious as owning your own company can feel, mm-hmm. but I think that there is a perception that being like the owner of a company or the president, the CEO, like yeah. is like a really cool title because it is. I mean, like if you're that far up in like a, you know, a large corporation or something, then it's a big deal.
Yeah.
But a pet peeve of mine happens to be this thing where, and I've seen it, and I've even fallen victim to it myself, is where like somebody will like have just launched a brand new company or something like that. And they're like, oh, I'm going into business for myself. And they, you know, they created their Facebook page and they did all this stuff. But then they change their position, you know, from like marketing director at this place to like, you know, CEO of letsgetyourlifestarted.com or something. And mm-hmm. it's like they like to go for that tagline where it's like, yeah, I'm the CEO of a company that
I know
only includes me.
I know exactly this maneuver you are speaking of. And I'm not sure. Yeah, it seems like if it's just like you and one other person, like, I don't know, when you hear CEO, you always, it feels like the words you hear for like big business or something.
It's true. Yeah. That's where my mind goes. Yeah. Is like you're the person who runs.
Like you live, you work in a skyscraper and the people on the next floors below you all report to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's like we're on the top floor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's always skyscrapers. I absolutely assume that 100% of CEOs work in skyscrapers.
Right. But of course, you know, we're CEOs, I guess.
But
you don't like that. What would you just like owner?
I think president. No, definitely not president. I think owner is fine. Usually, I just refer to myself as the host or a host mm-hmm. of our show.
Yeah,
because I feel like first and foremost, that is pretty much what the way I see my job is. I host a show that is on the internet.
Yeah,
that we also happen to, you know, write and edit and all of that type of stuff as well. But I feel like the primary thing that you would probably know me as doing is hosting a YouTube show.
Right.
So I think that's pretty much my job.
Yeah. But I mean, you do much more than that. You know, there's a lot of moving parts in any business that are not just the fun writing, shooting and editing parts of it.
Those are the fun parts. Good point. Good point. I agree with you that those are that is the fun of it, isn't it? I can't even tell you. The first time that I had to sit down and talk to a camera, it was the most frustrating and upsetting and like almost like the inner turmoil that I was dealing with in talking to that little black
circle.
piece of glass. It was like, you don't react at all. You gave me no feedback. Was that thing I just said funny? Because it seems, did your eyebrow twitch? Do it? No, it didn't.
Because
you're just staring
at me.
Yeah,
I'm going to have to edit it in.
Yeah.
And that's a joke. And I won't know if it was funny, but I'm going to continue on as if you're laughing.
Right. Well, in the beginning too, and this was a comment that I used to get like in our very early videos that we made, was that people people felt like I was just staring into their soul because I was so, it was so important to me. And like in conversation with people, I try to make eye contact as much as humanly possible. It's like, I'm looking at you unblinkingly.
Yeah.
And so I think that it was, I treated the camera exactly the same way. And I was also, I didn't know to move. So like there's a term for most vloggers called jump cuts, which is quite literally just the process of you end the sentence you were saying, move your chair over, and then say the next sentence. And the process of going from, you know, like the chair in this spot to the chair in this spot is the jump cut.
Right.
So it's the most basic form of editing. There's really nothing major that's happening other than butting two clips up next to each other.
Yeah.
With a minimal amount of audio that you don't hear the silence.
The interesting part about the way you just described jump cuts is that it's the exact opposite of the way it is taught to most students.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me more about that then.
Well, so like we utilize jump cuts to like be more engaging since the camera's not moving.
Sure.
So that we're not just like, and also so that we don't have to like memorize 15 minutes of dialogue all at once.
Right.
Right. But in school, jump cuts are like a cautionary. They're like a no-no, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's right. Like you're not supposed to use like jump cuts.
Jump cuts in traditional media, like if you're on the news and you have like a, like, and you do a jump cut, bad. Looks bad. Poor reporting. Poor shooting. Jump cuts are this thing you're supposed to avoid at like all costs. They're like, that is what you would call a jump cut. You don't want to do that.
Okay.
Whereas like, then I would start watching YouTube whilst also in college, and it's, you know, I'm watching like Philip DeFranco and Community Channel and the Vlogbrothers, and it's just like, jump cuts are how you talk to the camera. It's
yes,
like,
exactly.
Here
yeah.
Here is how you move it. This is how, look, I'm not going to move the camera. I'm just going to talk, but so that I'm still engaging. Now I'm over here, and now I'm over here, and I don't ever have to end my sentence because the next one just picks it up.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, no, and it works really well. But I still think that being said, there is still an art form to the jump cut.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I still think that there's a lot to be said for learning how to best utilize this particular form of, you know, forming together all of your thoughts into one big cohesive strip. But that was the thing, going back to my very first like handful of videos, is I had such a small amount of knowledge about what I was supposed to be doing that I would, like I said, stare directly into the lens, like aggressively into the lens. Like, you know, I was trying to see you, the viewer, on the other side. Like it was a telescope that you were looking through backwards.
Yeah.
That was sort of the way I felt about it. Yeah. You know, like I just got to look more carefully. And also I didn't know to move side by side. So I was doing jump cuts, but then it was like, my goal was to make it so that my head never moved from the exact position that it was like floating in the entire time.
Which like, if you're going to do jump cuts, you want to commit.
You got to commit.
If you have a jump cut where you haven't moved, that's the worst.
That makes it seem like basically what happened was you didn't memorize your line completely, stopped your sentence, had to look down, read the rest of it, and then picked it back up and hoped nobody noticed that literally there was a physical break.
Right.
Like, something like your nose moved a couple inches and your inflection changed entirely.
Yeah.
So the continuation of it doesn't end up being very smooth. Yeah.
It is one of those questions sometimes you'll get when you meet people in person, like, so do you actually like move the chair every time? And it's like, yeah,
quite literally.
I have wheels on the chair and I just roll around. But I always think about, there was a video by a guy named Zay Frank, who if you're a longtime dweller on the internet, you probably know who Zay Frank was, but he's often considered like the grandfather of all vlogging.
Yes.
But he had a show called The Show, I think.
Yeah.
Right. And then he came back later, like years later, with something called A Show.
Yep.
With Zay Frank. And in one of these episodes, he was talking about the way, like the ways in which he tried to engage with people, like on camera. And it's like, no matter what you do, no matter how you talk, like everyone talks a little bit differently, but everyone has their own rhythm and pace, and like no matter what you're making, even if it's like a different video on a different day at a different topic in a different place, you are going to have like a similar rhythm, like just to you have a rhythm.
Interesting.
You know, and it's just like, so the way in which he tries to like, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that if you are listening to the same thing or watching the same thing long enough, you will like sort of like tune into it like subconsciously, and you'll like lose interest. So his solution to this was to always like include little disruptions
right
in what he's doing. And like, he was like, it was something he was actively thinking about, but it could be like accidental disruptions, like while he was filming, like a fly flew across. He was like, was that a fly? And it's like that was not part of the video, you know? Or it might be like all of a sudden you're going and you just like yell in the middle of it. Like the next take was way louder than expected, or you're like in a completely new place. The camera did something, you know?
Right.
That. And it was interesting because he gave this advice and I like really tried to internalize it. Like, man, that is really good. Cause I don't know if you've ever watched any of Zay's stuff, you'll know like he is just super smart and about this kind of thing. But then interestingly, he also makes that series called like True Facts about, you know, whatever animal.
Yes, like yes. True Facts about.
Yeah. And sure enough, if you watch it, he'll be going along and his the praying mantis, and he has this like fun voice and he'll list off several facts in a row. But then he'll always do this like, he'll like break and be like, break character at some point.
Yes.
And it's like I know what he's doing. He's like, he's trying to lull you out of the rhythm. But the problem is, if you watch enough True Facts in a row, that has become part of the rhythm.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Like you become like completely used to. I feel like also, yeah, he'll like describing the praying mantis, and then like it will like bite the head off of another one, and he'll be like, holy crap.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So who is the narrator of Planet Earth? The David Attenborough, is that his name? Yes. Who has like just the most delightful voice ever. I love, like, he is one of those people. So this is like a rare thing for me. I've never had like a favorite band where it's like I love the band so much that I always tune into the same music, or really the same thing like with a director or an actor where like I'm so tuned into and want to see specific things like that they've done because they have such like a, it's like I've become such a fan of their specific version of the art form.
Right.
David Attenborough is the exception for me when it comes to like I would listen to David Attenborough narrate probably anything.
So does that mean that you like, if you were to pull up like his like IMDb page, would you just like start like, oh, I didn't know he made these things, I'm going to go watch it because he's narrating it?
Well, I've never done that before, but I would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I have actually looked up, things that David Attenborough has narrated on Netflix before.
Oh.
Specifically to like go through like the whole arsenal. Right. And he does a lot of like earth stuff.
Sure.
Specifically related to like nature and, you know, animals and things.
Yeah.
Which I love to fall asleep to anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Not even fall asleep to in like a bad way, but it's like the best way to like lull yourself to sleep. It's like, yeah, penguins.
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 That's Benedict Cumberbatch, who didn't know how to pronounce penguin. Or
while narrating a documentary.
Pronouncing penguins.
And he narrates a documentary about penguins.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least part of it gets to penguins.
Penguins.
As he calls them. Okay, so I will say that you said you're listening to it, you go to sleep. What I am presently listening to as I'm falling asleep is I am rereading a series called The Kingkiller Chronicles, probably better known as The Name of the Wind.
The Name of the Wind, which I also just started.
Which, yes, I feel like I see in our show notes you have a note about The Name of the Wind. So what did you want to discuss about
The Name of the Wind? Wind? Okay.
Which is like the most fantasy novel name ever.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
I feel like every chapter title in The Name of the Wind could be the name of a different fantasy series.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It's like The Binding of Iron. You're like, yeah, that sounds like a trilogy.
No, it totally does. We should write The Binding of Iron. We're stealing that from you. No, we won't do that for real. But no, okay. So I don't want to go too into it because, like, you know, this is not like a book club and everybody listening hasn't read the book. There's just one particular phenomenon that they describe in the book as sort of like this magical art that I think does a really good job, at least the way that I interpreted it, not even necessarily the way that it's intended, but like the way that I took it, is the concept of sympathy.
So, okay, so this is your first read through.
This is my first read through.
First read through, yes. And you have and how much do you know about sympathy?
Okay, so far the example that I've been given about sympathy, and this is what I think is so cool, is the idea of dropping a rock.
Okay.
And what the behavior of the rock is supposed to be when it is let go from your hand.
Right.
So, okay, this is a big thing for me because I would say one of the biggest, I don't even know, like driving forces of the way that I view the rest of the world is this desperate want to sit down with every single person on the planet and have a conversation about perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have very strong opinions about very specific things, and that's great. You know, like it's very important. It helps drive action in the world, and I love that.
Yeah.
But I do think at times there is this problem where it's almost like a sheer unwillingness to see the other person's perspective on something is almost just as bad as maybe what you're ridiculing the other perspective for.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So in The Name of the Wind, there is this experiment that they're doing. And I correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not that far into it. It almost seems like they are assigning the ability to have sympathy as more of like a semi-magical force versus just a learning that individuals would benefit from.
It's not like emotional sympathy.
Okay.
And I think what you're describing, at some point, it doesn't sound like maybe you've gotten there yet. Your main character will go into a very detailed point by point. These are the three C's of sympathy and how it works. And he does like a whole demonstration and stuff. I think what you are describing is like an aspect of sympathy, which is called the Ailer.
Okay.
In The Name of the Wind.
Okay.
But go ahead and describe the experiment.
You always know so many things. It's so impressive. Your brain.
Wan Shi Tong, he who knows 10,000 things. That's not from The Name of the Wind. That's from Avatar.
But you are that person. You know only 10,000 things. How Wan embarrassing.
Wan Shi Tong is an owl then.
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay. Gosh. Anyway, let me get to my point here. Maybe what I'm doing is even like taking or extracting this particular example and applying it to maybe like a way that I would like to explain a phenomenon that I have a hard time explaining to people, which is attempting to get people to understand how hard it is to change your opinion on something.
Yeah.
Or your perspective on something, because until you've experienced it from the other side, you only have your perspective, which you therefore believe to be correct because it's based on all of your experiences.
Right.
But it also negates the reality of the fact that the people on the other side of the argument have their entire world worth of experiences that has led them to their opinions as well.
Right.
And the argument amongst people, I believe, is not accomplishing the goal of getting people to think more similarly so much as it is to building the chasm between the two ideas. Mm-hmm. So I think that as people argue or like comment arguments, you know, on social media, things like that.
Oh, so toxic.
I know. It's very toxic because the objective of any comment argument is not to, at least this is my perspective of it, is it's never that people are actually hoping to change the opinion of the person that they're engaging into the argument with. Mm-hmm. The objective is to win the argument,
right,
which would mean that what you're doing it not even for your cause so much, but it, like, to heighten yourself,
right,
in the process.
I often find that many very strong opinions on social media are less about convincing people of what you're saying and more about wanting people to look at you and say, yeah, you're right.
Right.
It's like you're saying something not to convince other people, but so that other people can like lift, like, so that you can be the center of, I don't know, that you can be like praised for your opinion.
Oh, sure.
Or, you know,
right. Is right, that right. Like you're the champion of the people who agree with you.
It's like the law of the more you see a couple posting about how wonderful and great and amazing every little thing in their relationship is, the shorter the time span on that relationship's life is.
Sure, which, sure. So I wouldn't say that's a sweeping declaration, but it may be consistently true in certain circumstances. It's a kind of compensation.
Let me just say that I don't know that to be a hard and fast rule, but in my personal experience, whenever I see a couple start to like really get like lovey-dovey and really like gushy very publicly on the socials, I'm always like, oh, it's only a matter of time. And sure enough, it always is.
Oh, man. So I just imagine you like busting out a bucket of popcorn and being like, here we go.
Well, you know, maybe metaphorically.
Sure. Yeah, that's fine. Metaphorically eating popcorn is...
Not like I'm like rooting against people. I think what people do is they're like, it's like whatever their relationship is suffering from, they're like, you know what might make it better? Is if I very publicly say how happy and I like, so you can see that I am demonstrating how much I value you to a large number of people, which maybe you will think is great.
Okay, this seems like it could be like an idea for like some type of psychological study, but you literally take a sampling of people from the internet to figure out what type of outward messaging they're putting out into the world, and then literally doing a deep dive with their consent, of course, into like the psychology that might be going into them making those posts.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is everything actually like super honky dory and they're just super excited to share it with the world? Or is it like, this is the best way for me to handle the negative circumstances I'm dealing with is to, you know, project positivity out into the world in the hope that it then is returned. Because I like that thought, like, you know, the idea of putting positivity out there.
And, yeah. Oh, I know. It's not. Yeah. I think it's often with the best of intentions.
Yes, of course. Of course. So anyway, Name of the Wind has
let's get back to our rock situation.
Okay. The main character's name, Kvothe.
It is, I believe, spelled K-V-O-T-H-E, which you might say Kvothe, but it's supposed to be like quote, but with an H at the end. So Kvothe.
Oh, that's easier. Yeah. I can do that. Kvothe. I love it. Okay. So he has a mentor when he's a child, who is a character who I'm going to call Ben.
His full name is Abenthi.
Abenthi. Okay, perfect. Ben. So Ben. Anyway, yeah. So Ben is teaching Kvothe about this idea of sympathy. And the way that I think he goes about it is just, it's an interesting phenomenon that I like. So he basically picks up a rock and he is like holding it out. Ben is holding it out for Kvothe. And he says, what is going to happen when I let go of this rock? And Kvothe basically says, it will fall to the ground.
Yeah.
And it's like, because every single experience that you've had with rocks and their behavior when not supported by something is that they fall.
Yeah.
And so Ben challenges Kvothe to believe that the rock will float up.
Right.
And float above them instead of falling to the ground.
Correct.
And over and over and over again, he says, believe that the rock will float. And over and over and over again, the rock keeps falling to the ground, further affirming Kvothe's belief that it will fall to the ground.
Right.
And what I find fascinating about this is, to me, in my mind, and I know that this is maybe like a very extreme example of it, it's a really good representation of how hard it is to change your mind about something when you so believe it
right
to be true. So it's like, can you change your mind that there is a situation, despite all of the experiences you've had in life, despite all of, you know, the evidence that would say otherwise, that the rock can float? And like, how hard is it to like mentally go in and really assess the information that you've stored in your mind about this and find a way to change your mind about it?
Right.
Because, and so the example that I would say that I have always given prior to reading this particular example, to me, that's sympathy. Like the idea of sympathy in mastering it would be being able to believe that the rock can float.
Which, right, like you can like sympathize with the other side.
The other side. Yes. Like being able to see the perspective to the point where you can believe and understand it would be like true sympathy in this situation. Like,
okay,
there are two arguments, one group of people who says they'll float and one group of people who will say they'll drop. And it is as hard to change your mind and see the other person's perspective as it is to understand that the rock will always fall,
right,
versus float. Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Perfect. Okay.
Yes.
So
I got it.
The example that I have always historically given when like you go about attempting to change someone's mind on something is taking into consideration everything that has happened in their world that has led to them to having that moment that they have like their opinion on something. Like,
right,
they've had a world's worth of experiences that have caused that to happen. So for me, it's always like having a favorite sports team.
Yeah.
And so like the challenge that I would face people with when you're asking someone to change their mind about something is almost being like, okay, well, what's your favorite sports team? Who's their rival? Be a fan of them instead.
Oh, right.
Now. Like, right, change who your fandom is now.
Right.
Because, like, despite the fact that you grew up in a household that heavily supported this particular team and you went there for college and, you know, bleed orange and maroon.
Yeah.
Go Hokies.
Go Hokies.
You know, it's like, all of a sudden, how could you just switch over?
Yeah.
It would take time, right?
Like, it would take. Yes. Like if you were like, okay, you must now become, like if you were challenging me to this, like you must now become the biggest University of Virginia fan.
Right.
Like you are now bleeding Cavalier orange and blue.
It seemed like it pained you to say, like, end that sentence.
And I was like, gross.
Right.
Yeah. Wahoo.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. What a dumb.
See, you can't do it.
It's very difficult. It would be extremely difficult, and not that it couldn't. Like if you know, Luke came home from high school one day and was like, if he got a letter of acceptance from UVA and wanted to go there, I'd be like, go Hoos, you know?
Right.
No
like,
problem.
That would be the moment where you'd be like, okay, I can like change course here.
Yeah. I mean, I still went to Tech. I would just root for both, but.
Right. Yeah. No, I understand. But no, I think that's like the interesting phenomenon though, is that there is an enormous amount of complexity that comes into how and why everybody has opinions on the things that they have opinions on, and the validity of those opinions on both sides of the argument, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But that's what really gets difficult, is that when it comes to any given thing, you can try to have a conversation, try to go back and forth, but both sides of the argument are going to have these like really well-constructed, like right off the cuff arguments where it's like, well, blah, 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 blah.
Well, maybe. I find sometimes if you're walking into someone who has a strong opinion about something and the topic is brand new to you, like if you had never really considered, like, okay, never mind. You take it for granted, like, let's use like the flat earthers or something for an example.
Sure.
Like, you know the world to be spherical, right?
Right.
Exactly. No problem. No problem.
Well, I haven't seen it. I mean, like, I've never been to space and witnessed it.
Yeah.
You know, and Jay, it does seem possible that those could be doctored photos.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. Continue. Yeah.
But the thing, like, if you were, on the other hand, to see some like flat earther out on the street corner, like proclaiming it, like they are so deep, so believe it so hard that like everyone is just wrong. Like, it is flat. And oh my gosh, if you were to walk up to them and be like, dude, chill, it's a sphere. Like, I bet you could not defeat that person in argument. You know what I mean?
That's a very good point. Yes. They're much more passionate about it.
Right.
Than I am. Like, it's sort of something that like, I take for fact, I guess, like,
right,
because of the science behind it.
Yeah.
You're right. Like, you would be talking about somebody who has learned the arguments.
Yes.
And that's really what it would come down to. And then you're trying to compete with the arguments. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, on some level, like, that is, it's a strange situation where, maybe it's not a strange situation. Maybe I guess what it comes down to is just like the willingness to acknowledge that there have been circumstances that have led people to believing the way that they believe things.
Well said.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And I feel like that is maybe the easiest way to distill out, like in my mind before, I've tried to solve the idea of like, how can I get people to stop arguing on Facebook? Like, which I know is like a momentous problem, but it's like, when it really comes down to it, in my mind, that is about at the core of it, is that there are people who believe super strongly this and people who believe super strongly this. And maybe prior to the ability to communicate so widely, mm-hmm, on the internet, there's a better chance that you lived inside of, you know, an echo chamber that just also believed the same beliefs as you,
right,
did.
Yeah.
So like, growing up in a small town 200 years ago, it may have been a lot easier to know what the general beliefs of everyone around you was.
Right.
And maybe there wasn't as much, you know, conflict because of that. Or maybe there was. I'm not a historian.
I don't know.
But anyway, I just think it's interesting. This is like the thing that I would love to do. It goes back to the conversation that I had with the woman who barked at me for my dog using the restroom in somebody else's yard, even though I was cleaning it up.
Yes.
It's like, I want to be able to go through and have conversations with these people. Like, I want to like mediate is really what it is.
Right.
Like, I want to be able to, like, I want to watch two people having a conversation about something on the internet who are like arguing with one another. Come and sit at the very table in front of us and be like, let's have a real conversation here. I'm going to help. I want to mediate. Yeah. I want to help guide both sides through it and see if there's a way to like go beyond these extra worldly beliefs and almost like figure out like what is actually going on. Like, why are both of you here? Why are you arguing?
I think so often it's rarely ever about whatever the topic itself is, and is so much more about like people feeling or people getting really defensive because another viewpoint is basically like devalidating their whole experience.
Yes.
Like, on Earth. And it's just like, if that's true, then my whole life was wrong or something. And it's
right.
Like, then it's like, you know, and that's what people don't like.
Right.
More than whatever the topic itself is. It's often, I think, probably deeper, yeah, than whatever people are fighting about on the internet, which is just everything.
Do rocks float?
Okay.
Are fish wet?
Ben, don't.
How many holes does a straw have?
What color is a tennis ball?
Yellow?
Green?
Oh, boy.
No, I know. All sorts of fun things. Those are fun arguments to have.
Those are fun arguments to have.
But I'm sure you all know the style of argument that is just everywhere. You've been experimenting with being just off of the socials, though.
Yes, I have. So yeah. I have deleted both Twitter and Facebook from my physical device. So I didn't delete my Twitter and Facebook pages, respectively, but I don't have the ability to have freeform access to them.
Okay.
Just as like I'm, you know, laying in bed before I go to sleep at night, or, you know, as like I'm, I don't know, like waiting in a waiting room. That's not happening right now, but you know what I mean? Like the moments where you pull out your phone just to mindlessly scroll.
Yeah.
And I think for me, what I was finding is that more often than not, and this is not like a brand new realization. I know that almost probably on some level, everyone knows this to be true.
Yeah.
That like social media will bring you down at some point in time because either you are comparing yourself to other people, or you're seeing opinions that are very different from your own, or you're just even being exposed to the general negativity that is real world events that are happening, which are things that should be paid attention to, but also can, you know, depending on how prepared you are to take all that in.
Right.
Because it's a lot to feel.
Yeah.
And so basically, especially at the beginning of COVID, as like everything was sort of, you know, happening, Twitter especially was the big one where I was working from home. And I think when I first started working from home and like didn't have my routines all filled in, it felt like I had more free time, I guess, like more time that I didn't specifically know how to fill. Even whilst doing my job.
Right.
And so I think that I found that I was going down rabbit holes way more often.
On the Twitters. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh, this is getting dangerous for me. So I need it to go away. And so then recently with Facebook, what I found with Facebook, it was purely habitual. Like I sort of had the muscle memory of like my thumbs, where I would like, if I was bored, I would literally open my phone, I would click the thing, and I would immediately open it and just start like rolling.
Yeah.
But I was finding, as I really like took a step back to think about it, that there's never any actual like positivity that I'm taking from this particular app.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, so I don't need that. But it's been very interesting because it's almost like blazed the trail a little bit for me diving into like this TikTok realm.
Oh.
Which has been kind of interesting because I would say TikTok, strangely, although there's a lot of controversy around that app as well.
Yeah.
Like the app, the existence itself, but I would say not so much the actual content that I'm experiencing on the app.
Right.
Which I would say is almost, I would say 90% plus positive experience. Like it is people who are either just being funny, happy, doing something cool, making something cool. Like everything I'm seeing is just like uplifting.
Yeah.
I'm not finding that I'm playing any type of comparison game or thinking less of myself by way of using it.
Right.
So it's interesting. It's interesting. But then at the same rate, you know, it is still something where I can drop my head in and feel like I don't come up for a half hour. Then I'm like, what happened?
Where am I? How did I get outside?
Wasn't Alice here a few minutes ago?
Man, it's 2022.
You haven't looked up from your phone.
It's great battery life, though.
Great battery life.
I have still not like plunged into the TikTok waters, other than my wife scrolling and some being like, "Ooh, look at this! Ooh, look at this! Ooh,
okay.
Look at this!"
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's on my phone, but I've opened it like twice.
Oh, it's just part of the life cycle of having TikTok.
Right. Yeah. It's on your phone for a while.
It's on your phone for a while until you finally open it, and then you're like, "I'm taking the plunge."
Yeah. Maybe the problem is I still have Twitter and stuff on my phone.
That,
and it's like if I deleted these, I'd be like, well, where are my thumbs going to do now? Where are they going to go?
What are my thumbs going to do? I know.
Going to do.
Sometimes I feel like that's the thing, though, is that like it's become such a go-to like thing, like pulling your phone out and looking at it, and like looking for something to entertain you for like a blip of time.
Yes.
And it becomes like you're so heavily reliant on it that
there
are. Do you guys ever do like the phone stack? Like if you're like just watching a movie or hanging out at night, where you're like, okay, let's take the phones, let's stack them on top of each other. And basically the idea is like first person to go and pick up their phone and break the stack. You know, like nobody wants to do that. You don't want to be the person who like caves and goes and looks at your phone.
Right.
That's what Allie and I do. We basically like, we'll get to the point where we're like, man, we've been looking at our phones too much tonight. Let's put them together. And then focus. Watch the movie. Experience When Harry Met Sally.
Right.
Which I just watched for the first time like
a month ago.
Wow.
I know.
Great.
Really?
I don't think I've seen the full thing myself, but I got the gist.
I could not.
Can they just be friends? No.
No.
I could not get past the fact that Billy Crystal is Mike Wazowski. It was like,
maybe you just have to think of who was the actress in the movie. I'm never gonna remember, but she's just Celia, you know.
Is she Celia?
No, that'd be amazing. Wouldn't
from,
that be crazy?
From Monsters Inc. That actually would have been on Pixar's part remarkable to have Billy Crystal and her as well.
That would have been great. Now I'm gonna look up the actress's name because it's gonna drive me crazy.
I was gonna say everybody at home is probably screaming like, you need to know it.
Yeah. Meg Ryan.
Ryan.
Who? Never heard of her. Just kidding. She's quite good, quite famous. You got mail. That's a movie she's in with Tom Hanks.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Also, Sleepless in Seattle. That's a movie she's in with Tom Hanks.
Are they in a bunch of movies together?
No, it's just those two.
Just those two. They just happen to be very famous movies.
They just happen to be two very famous romantic comedies starring the same two. What? Let me double check that. Hold on. You've got... How can we call ourselves a popcorn culture podcast if we're getting these things? Okay. We got that. Right, Sleepless in Seattle. And... Meg Ryan. Okay, I got it
confirmed.
Right. Confirmed. Huzzah.
Wow.
Nailed it.
Wow, what a close one.
Look at that. Do you think they planned to have the same two people? There must be a story here, or is it just like, you again? No way.
No, I love this. I love this when actors have friends that they're always working with.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a thing. Like every once in a while, it's like, oh, every movie that they're in, this other person's also in it.
Oh, yeah. There's like the like Bradley Cooper and all his friends.
Yes.
Yeah, with Jennifer Lawrence. And
right.
Yeah.
They're just in like everything together.
Everything together.
It's like, yeah, we like to work together.
Yeah. We're just buds.
Or Adam Sandler, I think, has this as well, where there's like a lot
like
of people
Rob
who
Schneider
are,
and
they're like all in each other's movies.
Yeah, for sure. That happens.
Okay, Jay. So shifting gears just absolutely entirely, not related at all.
Okay.
You have in our show notes here, swearing.
Swearing.
Tell me more about what is happening that has made you want to discuss swearing? We don't swear on the interweb.
We don't really swear on the interweb. And it's one of those things where like the longer I have not sworn on the internet, the less I just do in real life.
Sure. No, and that makes sense. Yeah.
Part of it is because partially around the house, I wouldn't like swear very much because now we have kids and like, you don't want them to say stuff.
Right.
And they will hear the stuff and they will say the things. The other day there were some flies in our house.
Yes.
Me and Beth look around, I'm like, oh my God, these stupid flies. And then, you know, sure enough, a couple of days later, Luke is looking around and he's like, flies in my home. So stupid. Flies in my home.
So like, yeah. In my home.
In my home. Yes. Your home, son. The way he phrases it is so amazing. You're like, no. But then like the trick is like, you don't want to give any reaction. You don't want to be like, that was hilarious. Cause that was spurred on. But also if you're like, don't say that. That's another like, he's going to be like,
Okay.
That was a thing.
We're not
laugh about that later. Privately. Yeah.
After you go to sleep tonight, we are going to lose it.
Yeah, that was hilarious,
right?
First of all.
Okay, so here's the question about swearing at kids, though, because I feel like a lot of people are like, you know, they'll have children and then they'll modify all their exclamatories into like, ah, shoelaces.
Yeah.
You know, like you'll find some other way to say something that is not a known to the rest of the world swear word, but at the end of the day serves exactly the same function.
Right. Like what is, like, is there any difference if you meant the same thing?
I would argue that there isn't.
I would say that there totally is.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So I would say from a things being publicly acceptable standpoint, like there is the advantage of if like Luke is at Disney World and trips on, you know, a non-existent piece of garbage on the ground and says, ah, shoelaces. It's probably adorable to pretty much everyone.
Sure.
Because he didn't say the actual like S word.
Right.
But at the same rate, it's like, it's adorable to everyone else because it means that everyone else doesn't know that in his mind, he just said a cuss word.
Right.
But like in his mind, he still said a swear word.
Well, I don't think so, because to me, like the reason you have like cussing or things that like get tabooed as like a swear word or whatever is because like those words have power because of the like taboo-ness of them.
Like, so the idea is like you went there.
Right.
Yeah.
So like when you don't say it, it's not, it is different because by saying it, you are going there, and by not saying it, you're not going there. And to me, it's like, it's, I think for one, if you just replace all swear words with funny words, you are just, it is just funnier in general. I think it's way more fun.
Well, I think on that note, I think that there is the greater likelihood for the situation to not escalate in a negative manner.
Yeah.
Because if the general consensus of the surrounding people is that it was funny that it happened, right, instead of like people being like withdrawn, yeah, from it, then I do think that invites a greater circumstance of positivity,
right,
than it would anything else.
To me, I guess, I don't know. I think the reason I put this in here, actually, it circles back to like what you were saying earlier about just like online, like arguing and stuff.
Sure.
Like when you see people, like anytime I see posts that have like gone there and they're just like screaming profanity or about like how strong, like you know, I'm not going to be able to say anything.
Sure.
But like, to me, like nothing like turns me away from whatever you're saying, but like then that you've decided that you need to swear to make your point. Like, it maybe in your mind you're like, this is how serious I am, but to me it's just like, it just like screams like immaturity.
Your voice just now was a great Batman villain voice, just so you know. I'm sorry, not to cut you off completely, but
this is how serious I am.
Yes, exactly. It's like, oh, Batman. No, I agree with you completely though. Like, yeah, if you've taken to swearing, it's like the verbal equivalent of like the extra large exhaust system on that truck or something. It's like,
yeah,
it's like you are failing to use reasoned argument to get your point across, right, and you've chosen to go with what people recognize as, I am being aggressive right now, and you can tell because of the words I use.
That is exactly what it is. And it's like, yes, yell them out of their opinion. That has worked never.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. Yeah. I've had this exact experience. This is like my, like, you know, have you ever like said like a sentence out loud and you're like, that's the tweet.
Yep.
But this thing has been happening with me, and this has been my tweet in my head lately. Hopefully I can get it out correctly. But there are people that I am friends with who post opinions on the internet that I agree with, but the way in which they post those opinions make me want to disagree with them.
Ah.
And literally at the end of it, I was going to say, like, genuinely, if you want to know if you are one of these people, message me and I will let you know. with, you know, the idea being that hopefully it can lead to a positive, constructive experience.
Then you can
have
a dog poo conversation with them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, dog poo conversation.
There
precisely.
You go.
Yes.
Welcome to, that sounds like your new website, Ben. Like, welcome to dogpooconversations.com.
Right. Here's a place for mediation.
Exactly.
Right.
It's exactly what you thought it would be.
Right. Specifically use the word poo and not the other, because we're not swearing
exactly
to make our points.
Exactly.
Yeah. No. So, but no, it's a thing though. It's a thing. It's like, I agree with you so much. Like, I am so on your side here, but man, does it seem like you are being unreasonable? And if I wasn't on your side, then I know you would only be poking the bear. It's like,
right.
It's like, I guess that's what it comes down to. Like we were saying earlier, is like, is the function of your comment argument to change the other person's mind, or is the function of your argument to win the argument?
Right.
And I don't know. That's actually, I would say an interesting concept that someone has introduced me to just in the past year is the theater of debate.
Ah.
And the theater of debate is the idea that engaging in social arguments on social platforms, is what I'm trying to say, is that it allows for people to then tune in and effectively see what the two sides of the argument might be and where on that side of the argument you might fall.
Like, you're not arguing for the sake of convincing the person you're arguing with. You're arguing so that the other people reading the comments can get a more informed perspective of where you stand.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes. With I would say the only flaw in even that argument is that there is a difference between experts in fields and people who have done research that further affirms their argument.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It's like, it would be like if you were instead Googling like the, like, how, I'm trying to like make up an example on the fly here. That's not going to be like too specific.
Okay.
But like, if you're Googling
why are bees,
Like, how sick does chocolate make you or something? It's like, you're looking for ways in which chocolate can make you sick.
Right.
As opposed to just looking up stuff about chocolate.
Yes.
And finding out, like, you know.
Right. So that's, I actually did this exact thing earlier. So one consideration I've had, I was just talking to you about it before we hopped on, is putting solar panels on my house at some point. Not necessarily soon, but it's like, I love the idea of having solar panels.
Okay.
But this was like me trying to be investigative prior to, you know, furthering my decision making, going down that path, whatever. I literally Googled, why are solar panels bad?
Oh.
And literally doing, like, trying to hack the system a little bit.
Yeah, going.
Attempting to figure out, like all those people out there who are anti-solar panels. I don't know if that's a thing. It doesn't feel like it should be, but maybe it is. What are the arguments that people have come up for why not? Mm-hmm. Like, why wouldn't you have solar panels?
Right.
And it was actually very interesting because what I found was a solar panel website that was just being very, very, very snarky about things that are not actually bad about owning solar panels, but like would be looking at it maybe at its most what would be the best way to say this? Almost as if you were like corporate America, as if you were the entity that was corporate America and looked at things. Those would be the reasons that it would be harmful. Like, it's harmful to utilities companies.
Like
in the way that you would then be empathizing with the utility company as,
right,
you know, the one who would be like losing out on that.
Right. Someone works at that utility company, Ben. You're trying to take those jobs? Dude, this is what happens.
I was very taken aback by your sudden hostile nature that was not using your Batman villain voice.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
Hey, Jay.
Yeah.
Why did the orange lose the race?
Oh, he fell behind.
Wow.
I don't know.
That was a really, really good, honestly, maybe even better than the actual answer. He ran out of juice.
Oh, that's pretty good too.
Yeah.
That's pretty good too. I'll
be rhymed though. That's pretty clever right off the old cufferooski.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Man,
you.
Very impressed. Very impressed.
Oh, you know, I have three kids. So.
Well, I got to keep my dad
keep
jokes.
Keep my dad jokes real sharp.
Okay. Last topic of the day.
Okay.
Before we close out. I, this past weekend, went tubing.
You went tubing?
Yes. Like behind an aquatic vessel.
Okay. Yeah. Define tubing because... I feel like that some people are going to think you mean maybe like floating down the river.
Oh.
Some people might think you mean being pulled behind a boat on a big tube. And some people might be like, what's tubing?
What? No, people might be, people from the deep south didn't get it this time.
Okay, before I actually get there, I'm going to say that we talked about whether or not people from the United Kingdom thought American accents were like romantic or nice in the same way that Americans think that a British accent is really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seemed like the feedback was largely no.
No. Okay, so the real reason I was asking that, this is one of those few moments in my life where I had an underlying motive. Whenever I have considered, and this is not me suggesting we will do it, but whenever I've done the thinking about having like a D&D like podcast or even just doing it on our own for funskies.
Ben, now that you've said it out loud.
Well, you know.
People are gonna you've set an expectation.
My bad. Well, anyway, I wanted to see if my character was gonna be liked.
Okay.
Because
are they gonna be British or Southern?
Southern okay. For sure. Yeah, it's the only voice that I can do. Have you ever played the card game Kings?
Not so that you can do it, Ben. It's just who you are.
Oh, it's just who I am.
Just
okay.
Who you are. Well, yeah. I know where you grew up. I grew up there too.
Okay. The game Kings is like a beverage intake facilitator. And
oh, wait, sorry. The drinking game of Kings.
Beverage intake accelerator.
Sorry, it sounded like you said the game Kings.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
The card game Kings.
Yes.
Which is played with a 52 deco cards.
Yes.
Is usually what you do is you have like a can of substance, you know, maybe a little Croy in the middle of the table.
Yeah.
You spread the cards in a ring around the LaCroix, and as you pull cards, each card has a specific rule assigned to it. Like, three is me, which means you have to take a sip of your LaCroix.
Yeah.
Two is you, and then you get to choose somebody from the circle to take a sip of their LaCroix.
Yeah.
And then after each card is drawn, you put it under the pop top, and like eventually the pop top will crack, and then that person has to finish the entire LaCroix.
Yeah, from the center.
From the center.
Yeah.
Or if you break the circle of cards as they're wrapped around it, that also causes for drinking of the middle LaCroix. boy can.
Oh, that's not a rule I've ever played with.
Well, you know, I'm inventing new rules.
You're inventing new rules. Isn't the point that when you draw the kings, that's when you make the new rules?
That's exactly where I'm going with this.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was at over Memorial Day weekend. I had a cabin with just Alice, myself, her sister, and my soon-to-be brother-in-law. And we played a bunch of kings because it was just super like low-key, fun way to like do something. And with the king card, one of them was, all of us kept talking in these like weird voices just like because we were hyper and being goofy and stuff. And eventually somebody made the rule, you can't talk with one of the goofy voices. And then we were all like sad because we missed the goofy voices. So the next time a king was drawn... it was that you can exclusively talk in goofy voices.
Doesn't that like mean everyone's drinking all the time, or do these rules cancel each other out, or like the second one cancel the first one?
The second one cancels the first one.
Okay.
Yes. So then you had to talk in your goofy voice all the time. So I did it for like another like hour and a half.
Wait, can I hear your goofy voice?
Well, it's just my southern voice.
Oh.
So like the whole time I was just talking, you know, with my southern voice.
Right.
And so what I've always assumed is that one day when we eventually do our D&D campaign, that my voice will be like this.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good voice to me.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. So I don't have many other things that I can do, especially consistently enough to be a part of a campaign.
Look, I mean, I know, hey, when you grew up in Franklin County, Virginia.
Well, it's just back there, isn't it?
You just pick up on some things and you can just turn it on whenever you want.
So anyway, that is the reason I was like, well, that's what I want to do. Like if I ever had to be a character, that's who my character would have to be because it's my current only skill.
I wanted to be clear that we are not poking fun at people with southern accents.
No, this I would say that like... we have over. Yeah, no, not at all. I would not be like saying that would be being a negative character in any way. But my understanding of D&D is that
you get to be somebody else.
You get to be someone else.
Yeah.
And so I figured, you know, like that would be like a fun way for me to do it because I could do it for long periods of time. I could actually like go through. And what are you looking up right now?
I'm looking up the old Dungeon and Dragons name generator here.
You going to get me a name?
I'm going to get you a name here, brother.
All right. Give me a name.
Let's see. Oh, goodness. Wait, man. I thought this was going to be a lot easier. Fantasy names?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. There sure is a bunch.
Hold up. Hold up. Cowboy girl names?
This name generator. I've apparently summoned some fantasy dragon names from this website. I don't like the way this is doing it. Okay, here we go, Ben. I am on a website called Wizards of the Coast, I think. Wizards.com. That sounds good.
Wizards of the Coast.
I feel like I've heard of this. Input the first and last letters of your first name.
First name B. Last name C?
No. First and last letters of your first name.
Oh, I see.
If we go Ben or Benjamin.
Ben or Benjamin.
It's still B&N.
Okay.
Input the first letter of your surname, which we determined last time don't make no difference here in the time of COVID. Male character race. Oh, hold on. Man, we're making a lot of decisions you here.
Dwarf, elf, gnome, half elf, half orc, halfling, human. I am a human.
You're a human character. All right. You know, not much of a stretch, but character class. Oh boy. Could you be a paladin? I'm sure that's what Ben is. I don't know. Maybe not though.
Hold on. Let's look. See,
we got a couple of options.
Now I wish I knew more about what these things could do.
Ben, don't think, just do.
I'm going to be a ranger.
Who do you feel like you are? Yeah.
Like
ranger?
A Ford Ranger. It was named after me.
That's amazing. Your profession.
Swordsmith.
Swordsmith. There we go. We got human ranger swordsmith. Is the character noble or a commoner?
He seems like you're hovering on commoner.
Look, it could be random. You don't have to choose.
Let's do random.
Okay. And how famous is this character?
Ooh.
On a scale of 1 to 10.
Well, I'm on Wikipedia for my Cave Spring High School's notable graduates. I think that makes me a 4.
At least a 4. All right, here we go.
Here we go.
This is Ben's new D&D character name. It is Bellamin Chaucer.
Bellamin Chaucer.
Bellamin. Wow, it doesn't seem like that different from Benjamin.
It really doesn't.
Bellamin.
Bellamin. It almost, well.
Bellamin. This is my brother Belly. That's what I would call you. What do you think, Belly?
We call him that on account of.
On account of his six pack, a Miller Lite.
Oh, hey! Actually, I sort of love that.
Yeah.
Belly has a six pack.
Yeah. A beer.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Also known as Lord Bellamin the Ranger. All right, see, we're already there. We can generate again if you don't like Bellamon.
Well, I kind of like Belly, owner of Six Pack. Well, let's generate again just for funsies.
There we go. Oh, wait, no. I didn't change your full-on name.
Oh, well, that's not helpful at all.
All right, Bellamon Chorster it is.
You can call me Belly.
All right, let's do me just for the sake of it here.
Okay.
J and N here. Gonna go there. Characters now. Should I be human too?
No, you gotta be something different. I already claimed human. I feel like you'd be an elf.
You think I'm going elf. That sounds good. I'm gonna have to go druid.
Oh,
that was always my Diablo character.
Diablo.
Diablo. Character's profession. Ooh, dung sweeper. Unlikely. Let's see. What is it? What's the difference between a swordsmith and a blacksmith?
See, swordsmiths only make swords, man.
That's it.
We don't trouble ourselves with common buckles.
Yeah. Course not. Wouldn't dream of it. I'm going to be a scribe. I'll just be writing stuff down.
I keep track.
I'll go random on the nobility, and I will, as I too am on the Cape Spring High School
notable graduates,
I shall go with the four. Let's see. My name is Jumlaman Darksbane.
Jumlaman?
Jumlaman. Jumlaman and Belly. Jam and Belly.
Jam and Belly.
Taking on the world.
You know what they say? Jam actually makes it nausea.
Apparently.
Is that the ending of our acrostic?
That was, oh man, we didn't even talk about acrostics on this year pop.
I know. We didn't talk about tubing either.
Oh, well, you're right. I'm sorry. I got derailed.
That's okay. We can segue easily because one of Belly's favorite activities is tubing.
There you go. Okay.
We're back.
There it is.
So, okay. I'm chronically sore from tubing. So I went tubing behind an aquatic vessel.
Okay.
Although mostly this summer, because it's a good social distancing activity, I have been floating the river. So tubing much more in the traditional sense of, you know, using. So
Ben loves inner tubes is what I'm
Ben
hearing.
Ben loves inner tubes. Not like you love bean bags, but close.
Yeah. Well.
So anyway, tubing though has been one of these things that I remember, like, when we were growing up, the prospect of water skiing was, like, in my mind or delivered to me, like, you've graduated from tubing behind the boat.
Right.
So, like, once you have reached the point where you can water ski, you would never tube.
So pedestrian.
Because, like, you can't get out there and do stuff, right. You know? Like, really, it's more on the driver to see if they can throw you off the tube.
I have never, been riding a tube where the driver was not trying to...
Completely like
detube me.
Detube you, yes, of course. And so I think I had it in my head that I was kind of like, tubing? Who wants the tube? That's not even like a cool way to be pulled behind.
It's just for people who can't water ski to also be pulled behind the boat.
Exactly. Like they need something to do. So we have to have a version of it. Man, was I wrong. It was the best time ever.
Tubing's quite fun.
I had such a good time.
Yeah.
So I'm very excited because I did recently acquire a boat.
Yeah.
That
I'm glad you were able to find sympathy for the tubers.
I was. Wow. I was. The rock floats, man.
The rock floats. And so does the tube.
There you go. Okay, so going back to acrostic submissions, we had so many of them that we're still digging through. We're so terribly sorry. We've not been able to pick a winner yet, but we did pick a prize. We picked a prize,
go on.
Well, so the prize that we had planned was to send out the One Cup Life Cup of Popcorn Culture.
Right.
Which I had custom made, sort of.
Okay.
So, okay. From the beginning, my intent was to use, I believe it's a Yeti Rambler is the name of it. It's like a 20-ounce cup that has a lid that has a magnetic slider. So you can like close open, you know, magnetically. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
And otherwise, you know, just industrial. Keeps things hot, keeps things cold.
Yeah.
A decent form factor, fits into cup holders.
Okay.
Ticks a lot of boxes. Although I do have to say, several people sent me a link to this new cup that was like on Kickstarter right now that has like a coffee cup that can screw out the bottom, which I was very tempted to use, but not currently readily available to my knowledge. Anyway, so I had made Yeti Ramblers that come with green, because that's my favorite color, green paint, and they will be etched with the Popcorn Culture logo.
Okay.
And the winner of our acrostic challenge we'll both get, we'll pick two winners, one for your name, one for my name.
Yeah.
We'll both get one of those very exclusive pieces because I only made a few of them.
Oh, okay. Well, excellent.
Yes.
So
yes.
Wait, now that you've chosen your one cup, your true one cup.
My true one cup.
Have you started One Cup Life?
Well, so this was the other thought that I had here, yeah. Because it works well based on where we're at with having picked winners and waiting on these new cups to arrive, is that I was thinking we could like start, as soon as the cups get here, we will start my first month of One Cup Life.
Okay.
Live on the pop.
Live on the pop.
Yeah.
Wow.
So you guys will be here with me for the first sip.
For the first sip of Fred.
Of Fred.
Wow.
I know.
And yours will have, will it also have the popcorn culture logo?
Mine too will, yes. Yeah. So
etched into it.
So if you happen to win the acrostic challenge, you will be holding the very same mug as me.
Wow. Look at that.
I know.
Y'all have the same exact different one cup.
The same, and that's really what makes one cup so glorious, isn't it?
Right.
The more of them that there is exclusively the one of.
Excellent.
Excellent. Guys, as always, thank you so much for tuning into this week's episode of The Pop. If you'd ever like to get just a little extra pop action, we do record a special segment for our Patreon called After the Final Pop, which is just an extra 15, 20 minutes of Jay and I jammering on about something. Is jammering the right word? Jabbering?
Look, jam lamming. It's all about... No, I don't know.
You don't? Okay.
I don't know.
Jam lamming.
Jam lamming. We're just jam lamming on about a couple of new things.
Jam lamming doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
It needs to be like jam a lamming or something.
Jam a lamming.
Jam a lamming.
Well, I think we just call you Jam.
Well, yeah. I still think I want the full... I'm going to adjust the given name from the generator to be Jam a lamming. So that's Jamalamin. Jam a lamming.
Jam a lamming.
Jam a lamming Darksbane.
Actually, that's really good. Yeah. I love it.
Jam a lamming Darksbane here.
Anyway.
Male elf druid.
If you guys would like a little extra popcorn. Culture action. Every week we do record an additional 15 minutes or so of bonus content for patreon.com/popcornculture. We have three tiers. They're all $5 and they also get to serve as a submission as to who you believe is the one true host of Popcorn Culture. Hint, it's Buzzy B.
It's Jam-a-Lam and Jazza J.
In the meantime, we want to give a huge thank you to these patrons who do support us over on Patreon, including Lauren Valenza, Mauricio Valdez, Moises Marquez, Jacob Fisher, Becca Notkin, Mats Ferulli, Michael Lansky, Angela Whitehead, and Marcus Muller.
Oh, thank you all so much for your continued support of The Pop.
Yes, otherwise, guys, until next week,
pop pop!
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.